accession number 18823, Reel 1.
Jack Tate, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Great Yarmouth.
Which year was
Norfolk,
this?
Norfolk, 1925.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Great Yarmouth?
I did. All the way through schools at Yarmouth.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
So that would have been the year the war broke out?
Yeah, 1939.
Which month did you leave school?
August, when the school broke up for the summer holidays, was when I finished.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I did, on the Sunday morning. And strangely enough, the sirens went off within an hour of war being declared as a false alarm.
How much effect on you did the war declaration have at that age?
Well, the school had compulsory evacuation shortly afterwards, although I'd already left. But most of my friends were evacuated, and I was more or less left on my own. And when I was 15, I tried to join the Navy, but I was too young. They wouldn't take me. I tried again when I was 16 and a half, and they told me to inquire again when I was 17 and a half, which I did, and was accepted. I was called up and went to HMS Ganges for my training.
Could I just stop you there?
Because
that appears to be in 1942.
Yes, yeah.
What about those early years of the war from 39-42? Were you living in Yarmouth all
yes,
the time?
Yes, and I joined the ARP. I was an ARP messenger boy during the worst of the raids on Yarmouth.
Can you tell me about what your memories of the Blitz in Yarmouth, please?
Yes, there was one particular night when they hit the parish church, the large brewery belonging to a firm called Lakin's, the shopping centre in King Street, the area they called the Rose, which were really old houses. They were half of them wiped out with landmines. And there was quite heavy casualties. No, I forget the number at the moment. But that was a real bad night. We used to get lone raiders coming over, just single planes during the day, and you'd probably have as many as four or five in a day. Whether they were training air crews or operational, I don't know. But we had quite a number of them all the time.
What was your address in Great Yarmouth at the time?
A road called Ordnance Road, and it was next to the gasworks, within 300 yards. There was the river, where the Navy had motor torpedo boats, which were a prime target. About 200 yards eastward of us, we had the naval barracks, and we were between the naval barracks, the MTBs, and the gasworks, so it was quite a vulnerable area.
Did the Germans hit either the gasworks, the MTBs, or the barracks?
Yes, they hit the gasworks, and we had all our roof taken off, every window in the house smashed, and we had to move up four houses.
So what numbers in Ordnance Road did you live at different times?
We were 51 when the raid was on, where we had the roof off, and we moved up to 54, which was, fortunately, didn't get any damage.
And was 51 rendered uninhabitable?
It was repaired eventually, but not for about 6 months. And there was compulsory evacuation, and there was not many civilians left in Yarmouth.
Where did the civilians go?
Well, only people with important jobs were allowed to stay within, I think, a 5 mile radius of the coast.
But did you stay?
I did, because I was working at a factory called Johnson's, which was on war work, making oilskin coats for the Royal Navy and waterproof clothing.
What was that job like?
Not bad. And we did fire watching 3 nights a week, as all the younger men had been called up, and there was mostly men over the age of 60, and about half a dozen lads about 16 years old. And they used to ask us if we would do their shift for them, which we did. We're glad of the 3 shillings a night, which we used to get. And we got nearly as much fire watching money as we did weekly wage.
And how did the civilians in Great Yarmouth react when they heard that they had to be compulsorily evacuated?
Well, most of them went voluntary anyway. Were glad to get away from the coast. Because, as I said, the daylight raids mainly, with single or perhaps 2 planes at the most. And that got very annoying and very dangerous. Because Yarmouth is so narrow. And there was quite a lot of casualties.
Did you know of anybody who was a casualty?
Yes, 2 of my friends were killed. One, a young girl I went to school with, whose name was Brenda Holmes. She worked in an office, and she just left off Saturday dinner time as the office got hit, and she was killed. Another one of my friends, he was in the Home Guard, and when his spell for a break came, he'd forgotten to take his greatcoat. He slipped home to get it, and while he was in the house, his house got hit and he was killed.
And where did you take shelter during the bombing?
Well, we had what was known as a Morrison shelter, which we had in the front room.
What was it like sheltering in that?
Quite comforting, really, because they were very, very strong and would take the weight of a house collapsing on it.
How frightening was the bombing for you?
Well, as a youngster, I was not particularly afraid, not until they were directly overhead. Then obviously you had to take cover. But being an ARP messenger, we used to turn out quite often while the planes were still over top. That was rather frightening.
What did the ARP messenger work involve?
Taking messages from the headquarters to the various outlying posts on a push bike, and occasionally if there'd been a raid, there'd be brick rubble over the road and you often had to carry a bike over it. And another night, one of the worst nights, was we had an incendiary raid, and there was hundreds of incendiary bombs dropped, quite a lot of fires in the town, and the next morning we went round collecting incendiary bombs that hadn't got off, and we got 44 unexploded.
Where was the HQ?
It's on a place called Peggotty Road, the old barracks hospital.
And who would be in the HQ?
About 3 wardens who were either overage for military service or medically unfit.
And how did they know where to send you?
Well, in touch by telephone, obviously, and if they needed anything, and we would have to run it up. Well, like occasionally they'd run out of various things that they needed for firefighting. If they'd already used it that evening, we'd have to take them up extra firefighting equipment. And very often we'd get sent to what was known as the report centre, which was the main ARP depot, and we'd go there ready for being dispatched to anywhere in the town.
And there were posts, you say, dotted all over?
Oh yes, yeah. There was air raid precaution posts with what they were known as wardens. There was the police posts. There was heavy rescue squads. When the people were trapped, they used to go and get the people out with heavy lifting equipment. And, well, various other things that were needed during a raid.
And were your messages on a piece of paper or just memorised?
Oh, no, written, always typed.
And you provided your own bike, presumably?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Do you have a uniform?
No, only an armband.
What did the armband say?
Just ARP, air raid precautions.
And what colour was that?
Oh, blue, I believe, if my memory served me right.
What was the morale like in Great Yarmouth under the bonnet.
Oh, that was quite good, really, to say that the amount of damage. But as I said, I suppose 50% of the houses in Yarmouth were empty during the war. There were two nasty events. One was when the Reds quarters got hit on Queen's Road, and I think about 15 Reds were killed. And a few weeks later, there was an army post on the seafront at Great Yarmouth, and they hit the ATS headquarters, and there was quite a few of the army girls killed there.
Did you visit either of these sites?
Afterwards, yes. Not at the time of the damage. In fact, one of them, the one where the army girls were killed, there's a plaque outside now to this day, recording the fact.
And what did people think of the Germans who were carrying out the raids?
Not a lot. There was one or two shot down. One night when we were firewatching on the factory at Johnson's, there was a raid which had been carried out inland, and as the German bombers were coming back to go home, there was quite a heavy anti-aircraft barrage around Yarmouth. And during the night, well, early hours of the morning, they shot two down, which both crashed in the sea off the harbour's mouth.
Did you see any captured German airmen?
Yes, yeah, which one of the boats brought in. They'd shot a plane down at sea, and so I think they saved all the crew, and they brought them back as prisoners. They also used to bring quite a number of German Navy men in when they were fighting with the E-boats, when they were protecting convoys. And the E-boats were actually faster than our MTBs and MGBs, but occasionally they would have a lucky strike and get them.
And what kind of reception did the German captors get from the populace?
Well, normally they didn't see much of them, because they'd bring them in and they'd be straight into a vehicle and taken to Norwich or prisoner of war camp, wherever they took them.
Did you know of any POWs kept in the area of Great Yarmouth?
Towards the end of the war, but I didn't know of any at the beginning. But when they started bringing the Italians over, they just used to have a diamond in their jacket, and they used to be working parties on the land. And but up till then, I'd never seen them actually working, only towards the end of the war.
What kind of reputation did the Italian POWs have?
Not very good.
Why not?
They were no trouble as prisoners of war, but where they were fighting, they didn't have much of a reputation. Not as good soldiers anyway.
Were there any Allied troops around in Yarmouth?
Oh yes, hundreds. Well, hundreds. There was a big RAF training camp all along the seafront. The hotels and boarding houses were occupied by RAF trainees. There was army units ready to defend if Germans had invaded. Heavy gun batteries on Galston cliffs. There was anti-aircraft guns all along the seafront on towers, Beaufort guns mainly. And they also brought in two flak ships, which laid in the river, completely just literally full of anti-aircraft guns, and they could put up a terrific barrage.
How did the Allied personnel behave themselves in Yarmouth?
Quite good, really. They had quite a good record. There was only one case I knew of where a sailor returning to his ship who was worse for drink. There was one of the shops along the South Quay called the Yarmouth Stores. They'd had their windows smashed earlier in the evening through a bomb, and he took a pair of shoes out of the window, and in the morning they found he'd taken two left feet.
Is that well known to people in Yarmouth?
Yes, yeah. Two left shoes he'd got.
Now, coming back to your own story, you said you volunteered for the Royal Navy, I think, 16th of November 1942. What happened then?
I got called up to HMS Ganges. I joined up as a seaman. I completed the basic training, foot drill, and started the heavy gun drill. Then they wanted volunteers for visual signals. I volunteered for that, passed all the tests, was accepted, and I went on a signals course to HMS Royal Arthur at Skegness.
Could I just interrupt you there and ask you about, first of all, Ganges? What was Ganges like?
Very good. Very, very good.
In what way did you find it so good?
The discipline was absolutely red hot. You knew exactly what you could do and what you could get away with, which some places you went to, you would be told what to wear, what they called the rig of the day. Some ships, they didn't pipe it, and you could wear more or less anything, but at Ganges, the discipline was rigid, and you were far better off.
So you felt that suited you?
Yes.
Did you learn very much at Ganges?
Well, strangely enough, I was in the Sea Cadets before I joined the Navy, and I learned quite a lot in the Sea Cadets. I knew my Morse, semaphore, could box the compass, and knots and splices, which we'd learnt. And when I was at Ganges, it wasn't long before the chief sorted me out. He said, "You've done this before, haven't you?" I said, "Yes, in the Sea Cadets." And I finished up, I took half the class, teaching them.
What were your ambitions as far as the Navy was concerned at that time?
Well, mainly I joined, as I said, most of my friends had been evacuated, and that was more for company, really, than anything. But once I got in, I really enjoyed it.
And where did you say you went to after Ganges?
Royal Arthur, HMS Royal Arthur at Skegness.
What was that like?
That was for signals course. It wasn't bad, but the accommodation wasn't too good. It was the old holiday camp, and we had three to a chalet, and we had floods, one big flood there, and just after I left there, they had an air raid, and I think there was quite a few killed there.
What kind of signalling were you learning?
Visual. Visual signals, that's Morse with the light, oldest light, 10-inch signal and lantern, and flags.
Were you able to cope with what you were expected to do?
Yes. As I said, I'd learnt the Morse and the semaphore in the Sea Cadets, and I got on very well with it. When we finished there, I went to Royal Naval Barracks Portsmouth for drafting, and I was drafted to HMS Glenroy, which was what is known as an LSI, that's Landing Ship Infantry, and they carry the landing craft.
Can you describe the impression that it made on you first saw it?
Yes, that was quite a nice ship. The only trouble was the accommodation. We were right down in the very bottom and very crowded, as we used to carry, I think it was somewhere in the region of 1,000 troops when we were fully loaded, and accommodation was very cramped all over. And the hammocks, we slept in hammocks in there, and if everybody was off watch, like when you're in harbour, there wasn't enough room for you all to sling your hammock, so you had to sleep where you could. But apart from that, it wasn't too bad.
And where did you join the ship?
At Greenock.
And what kind of people were you with in the ship?
Well, we carried mostly Indian troops when we were loaded, and Royal Marines. We have I forget the exact number. We carried LCIs, Landing Craft Infantry, LCPs, Landing Craft Personnel, and one or two specialist landing craft, with like radio equipment and that sort of thing.
And what date have we reached now when you joined this ship?
It was, let me just have a look.
The date was?
Oh, gosh, I lost it.
November 43, I think.
Yeah. 27th of November 1943, we left the Royal Naval Barracks at Portsmouth. The 28th, the following day, we arrived at Greenock. We embarked 29th of November. We sailed from Greenock. Arrived in New York, USA, 7:30 p.m. Passed the Statue of Liberty. Marvellous to see lights again after blackout in Britain.
What was the voyage across the Atlantic like?
That was quite rough, and it was my first long sea trip, and that was the only time in all the time I was in the Navy that I was seasick. And I wasn't alone, most of the crew were, and we spent Christmas at a place called Plainfield, New Jersey. It was 3 days of luxury with a private family. Then we left a place called Asbury Park for Vancouver, BC in Canada. I was drafted off the Glenroy there, and we went across through the Rockies. February the 1st, 1944, we arrived at Vancouver. It was a long journey, as our troop train had to shunt off the main line to let the normal service through. February the 2nd, 1944, drafted to the signal station. March the 11th, we left Vancouver, arrived Victoria on Vancouver Island, drafted to HMCS Naden, which was a signal station. We got an invitation to a Mr. and Mrs. McKelvey's for a long weekend at Cobble Hill near Victoria. June the 6th, 1944, left Victoria. We commissioned HMS Thane, which was an escort carrier, built by the Americans, arrived at Vancouver. June the 7th, trials, speed and gunnery trials. We went to Seattle to ammunition ship. June the 19th, HMS Thane's farewell dance at the Commodore Hotel. July the 9th, left Vancouver. July the 12th, arrived San Francisco, USA, escorted by US Navy blimp, which delivered the morning papers to us. We sailed in past Alcatraz, Prison Island, and under the Golden Gate Bridge.
Could I just stop you there? What's a US Navy blimp?
It's a small Zeppelin which carried depth charges for anti-submarine use, and we had one escort us from Vancouver right the way through to the Panama Canal.
And what kind of a ship was HMS Thane?
That was an escort carrier, which was solely built for defensive convoys. They were very small, as carriers go, and the Americans, they built, I don't know how many, but when we were in Vancouver, there was about eight of them there being fitted out. And for some unknown reason, the British couldn't pick them up from American shipyards. The American crew took them to Vancouver from there where they were built, and the Royal Navy had to pick them up in Vancouver. And anyway, going back, we left San Francisco on the 14th. We arrived
14th of which month?
14th of July. We left San Francisco on the 14th. We arrived at Balboa July the 23rd in Panama. We lost one seaman overboard during this trip. No sign of the body. July the 24th, 1944. We went through the Panama Canal. Arrived at Colon, the Atlantic end. Shore leave was granted. What a dump.
Why do you think it was such a dump?
It was filthy. It was a place where you had to walk around in several or you'd got robbed and beaten up. We were glad to leave. July the 25th, we left Colon. We had a Reuter died at sea from drinking wood alcohol at Colon. We buried him at sea. August the 1st, arrived Norfolk, Virginia.
Could I just interrupt you again, mm-hmm. then, before you take it further? Can you tell me about your job aboard this ship, the kind of jobs you were expected to do?
Yes, in the wartime, you couldn't use WT. As soon as you touch your Morse key by radio, your position is given away. So all signalling at sea between ships was done by either light or semaphore flags.
What were the problems in doing that job for you?
No problems really. It just becomes as simple as reading a book after you've trained. There's both the signals, the Morse and the semaphore. It's quite easy once you've had the practice. And we used to do watches, 4-hour watches. You'd do 4 on and 8 off, or 4 on and 6 off, depending whether it came into the dog watches, which were 2 hours, as against all the other watches, which were 4 hours.
What was your action station on in that ship?
My action station was on the bridge on the signal lanterns.
Were you called to action stations?
Yes, very often. At dawn and dusk, which was the worst time for attack because you're silhouetted against the sky as the sun is either rising or going down.
And how did you get on with the officers in this year?
Oh, quite good. That was the one thing about naval officers, mostly, once you've worked with them for a time, they are very polite. But unfortunately, at a later date, we crossed some army officers, and we couldn't say the same about those.
How did they behave?
Very crude. They tried to treat us like scum. We were going to this, which was a nightclub, and they demanded that the proprietor keep the Navy boys out, and fortunately, he refused. He said if he'd got to keep the Navy boys out, he'd close down. And they kept their little corner in the club, and we had our corner.
And who were these army officers?
They were white British officers with Indian regiments. The 914th Punjab, to be precise.
Could you say anything to them?
Well, we didn't at the time, but it later materialised. I don't know who did it, but they'd left their Jeep in the car park and somebody got their own back by removing all their wheels and left them stranded.
Was that you?
No, I had nothing to do with it. They didn't know anything about it till the next day when the inquiry was going on about where their wheels had gone. I had a good idea who it was, but that's all I'm saying.
Where did that happen?
Where? That was after the war had finished in Borneo, a place called Kuching in Sarawak.
But and how did living conditions in HMS Thane compare with living conditions in HMS Glenroy?
Not too bad. We only had one trouble.